You're coming to a town where American comedy legend Lucille Ball was born and raised. Did you watch any of her shows growing up? And if not, what other American comedy shows did you watch as you were growing up?
I was unlucky in that we didn't get many comedy shows like that growing up in South Africa, mostly due to the fact that you know, free speech was restricted in South Africa, and comedy is one of the first things that gets restricted when you have a state that restricts speech. I was lucky enough to watch. I watched some of the clips online. You know, my girlfriend always tells me to watch like some of the funniest stuff from sitcoms, and goes back and goes like, "You got to watch this. You got to watch. Have you seen this clip? Have you seen this clip?" So I try and go back and watch as much as I can, because some of it is still hilarious.
Now, you did grow up in South Africa during the time of apartheid. In fact, your parents come from different racial backgrounds. Their marriage itself was illegal.
Yeah, well, they couldn't even get married, never mind their marriage being illegal. Marriage itself was illegal. Fraternizing with people of a different race was illegal. So I guess Americans could, if they were old enough, could remember a time in America when there were rules like that in certain places that restricted people of different races, mostly black and white, from getting together. But in South Africa, it was an extreme form of that, and it was legal. This was the law of the land, and that's the world that I grew up in, I guess, which is a horrible thing. But you know what they say, tragedy plus time equals comedy, and that's how I came to be.
What lured you into comedy? Was it kind of that feeling of being part of the underground, like perhaps like a punk rocker might be over here?
No. If anything, it was the opposite. You know, what happened was in South Africa, once free speech was something that everyone could participate in, I think there was a boom. You know, there was a comedy boom, because it was a thing that had never existed before, and now all of a sudden it is. And so we were in this space where everybody wanted to get out and say something, and we didn't even know what to say, but that was half of the joy.
And as you rose up through the ranks, you were discovered and you came over to America here. And now you've got the task of being the successor to Jon Stewart, a very big honor. But I imagine some very high pressure that came along with it.
Oh, it's extremely high pressure, you know, and rightfully so. I mean, Jon Stewart was, you know, the conscience of America, the most trusted man in America. You know, I remember on Time magazine, John turned The Daily Show from, I guess, just another show, which at the time was very popular on the Craig Kilborn, into really the counterbalance to what the cable news networks were doing. And so having to fill the empty seat that John had left is really a tall order, one that will take a long time for me to even come close to. And, you know, it's a challenge, but I relish it, and we're growing every day.
Perhaps the defining moment for John was when he had his spat during an interview with commentator Tucker Carlson, and some have said they get their news from The Daily Show. Is it disturbing to you when people say they get their news from a satirical program?
Not necessarily. I think I understand where people are coming from. I do think that has changed over time, though. You know, I think this was pre really the internet boom. This was pre-cell phones. This was pre-smartphones, where people are getting their news pushed to them. We're now in a different space where, as opposed to people getting their news from us, I think people are slowly tuning into The Daily Show for us to dissect and react to the news. Because, you know, sources like Facebook are where people are already getting their news now. And unfortunately, as we've learned recently, people are trapped in an echo chamber of news that is only tailored to their views and nothing that expands them.
And some of which is not necessarily known to be truthful at all.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Facts have become an optional thing in America, you know. There used to be a time when everyone had shared facts and then you formed your own opinions, whereas now everyone has the right to their own facts, which is a scary, scary place to be in.
We're seeing a lot of that in the presidential campaign. And whenever there's a contentious issue, several years ago during the Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky scandal, I had interviewed American comedian Mark Russell, who some might say would have been kind of a predecessor to Jon Stewart. And during the conversation, the point was brought up. He didn't want to call it a field day. I mean, there was rich comedy material there. He didn't want to call it a field day so much. But do comics get kind of that private little feeling of, yes, there's gold here, or is there still a respect for the magnitude of what it is they're making fun of?
You know what's funny is I don't actually think of it as a boon in that way. I sometimes feel like, you know, especially if you're on a circle show, it essentially feels like you've been called up for duty. You know, you all have to focus your efforts on something that is happening. And whether it be Donald Trump or in South Africa, it was an apartheid government, or when it's the government that's corrupt, is when, you know, you all have to focus your energies on this one goal. So I don't see it as a good thing per se. I just go, we have the platform, we have an opportunity to contribute positively to this conversation. So let's do that. You know, because normally you get to joke about anything else, and if you're doing that, people don't care. They're like, yeah, let's have fun and let's enjoy this. But when something bad is going on, people need you in some way or another to provide some catharsis.
What have you found most cathartic over the past few weeks with the presidential run, especially coming out of the conventions?
I think most importantly for me was just seeing the difference. Remember, these were my first conventions, and seeing what was happening in Cleveland really, really worried me. Just not because of the rhetoric alone, but because of people who have fallen for that rhetoric. There are a lot of angry people out there who are using Donald Trump's rhetoric to embolden themselves in their views, whether it be xenophobia or racism or even just a general anger. You know, I don't think it's all bad people, but there are a lot of people who've been forsaken by the government, a lot of people who haven't been looked after. The middle class is shrinking. There are a lot of voters out there who feel like America's not looking at them. And so you have a candidate like Donald Trump who comes along, who threatens to shake things up and win for everybody. And some who don't even believe him, they don't care. They just go, I like him because he's going to make everyone hurt as much as I'm hurting right now. And that's a scary place to be in. And so seeing the DNC and honestly enjoying and realizing that we are in a place where a diverse audience of people, ages, races, ethnicities can come together and say, hey, we don't agree on everything, but we have a shared goal. I think that's a really beautiful counterbalance to see.
Our friends over across the Atlantic in Great Britain have been able to laugh at themselves over the years, especially in their post-empire years. Here in America, do we have that capability of laughing at ourselves? Surely we get audiences that break out into laughter with jokes, but do we have that same willingness to laugh at ourselves when we look at our society, whether it's divisive and some might argue maybe we're the next empire on the way down? Can we laugh at ourselves the same way the Brits do?
I think you can, but in a different way. The one thing you must acknowledge is America's gift is its curse. And that is America's unique nation in that it is a nation of immigrants. You cannot deny that. You know, I always find it funny when people say we don't want these immigrants here. And it's like, but there is no one who is from here. Only Native Americans are from this country. So everyone else is, the descendants of immigrants. And so what that happens is it means it's a beautiful thing because America is founded on an ideal and it is a diverse nation unlike any other in the world. The downside of that is there is sometimes no shared feeling in the populace, you know. So in Britain, the people, they go, we are British. We have been British. We've always been British. We didn't come from anywhere to be British. Most people there are British born and bred. And then you have a few people who have immigrated into the country. But so it's easier to laugh because you go, this is us, and it's always been us. In the U.S., the us is sometimes fractured up by the parts of us, and that's when it becomes difficult. But I do think that also means there is more opportunity for people to experience like a joy of laughing at themselves. But what people first have to do is become themselves, and then you can laugh at it.
As you head into Jamestown this coming week, what is it you hope to achieve the most? What is it you really want to take away the most?
Oh, hope to achieve the most is a great show. That's always what I'm looking for. It's just, connecting with audiences, sharing a moment in time, laughing together. That's what I've always loved about good comedy shows. That's the reason I do comedy, is because it's an escape for all of us. It doesn't mean the world doesn't exist anymore, but it just brings us together and helps us realize that it's not all going bad. You know, the news often tells us it's all going bad, and yes, we do have to focus on the bad, but things are really not as bad as they seem. Not everything is going to hell. Not everyone is getting shot and killed. It is not as bad as people would have you believe. So comedy is always a nice place for us to get in and release that pressure. And the biggest thing I'm hoping to take away is just, you know, new experiences. I love traveling. I love meeting new people. I love, experiencing comedy in different places. And what better place to go than to the Lucille Ball Comedy Festival, because I get to go and see the archives. I saw at the at the museum. They just got the George Carlin archives, which I'm really excited to go and check out if I can. And so, it's just experiencing and learning new things.
What American comics have influenced you over the years?
Oh, wow. Eddie Murphy, definitely. Dave Chappelle, more recently, as not just a comedian, but as a friend and a mentor. Neil Brennan. I'm trying to think who else. Bill Burr, who is just, you know, he's unrelenting. And then there's so many. There's so many comedians when I think, I can't even think of all of them at one time, but those are the main ones that spring to mind.
What have they taught you the most? What's been the most important takeaway from those comedians?
I think it's to just do your thing. Be fearless and do your thing. Find your audience, be yourself, and trust in what you're doing. And that's what I enjoy when I watch those comedians, is I see them go on different roads with the audience. I see them lose them and then win them back. And most importantly, I see who they are when they're on stage performing.
Trevor Noah, coming to the Lucille Ball Comedy Festival, host of The Daily Show. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for yours.